first of all, Marshtam himself says it's got to be a Tanai that, on the one hand, he said a Tanai that's almost impossible to fulfill, that for sure you can't do, and a Tanai that's easy to fulfill, he thought you could do. Now the question is, how do you measure these things, and what about what seems to be a vast space in the middle? All right, so what if something is a little bit more than easy, but a little bit less than impossible? So where does that fall in? That's a fair question. But essentially, aside from that issue, so he assumes that it's basically only a Tanai that has to do with the divorce itself. And regarding the article, the topic he was writing about, so he has a somewhat counterintuitive distinction there, that he says that the case, the Maharshtam was talking about Shalot Tinasi Laploni, that I'm divorcing you so that you shouldn't marry somebody else, a specific somebody else, this one guy. So that is considered to be part of the divorce, which is, again, a little bit counterintuitive, because, as he writes, that maybe that's why they're divorcing in the first place, because she's interested in a specific guy, and therefore he's within his rights to say, okay, I'll divorce you, but you can't marry that guy. Rav Teichovsky has an article in Tchumen. I've mentioned Teichovsky, I think, a few times. I actually sent you this article also. We won't read it inside together, but I think I sent it to Morty last week. I sent two articles, one which we'll look at in a minute, but another article from Rav Teichovsky where he goes through this topic as well. And he, first of all, notes that not everybody agrees with the Maharshtam. But aside from that, he essentially takes the position very similar to Rabbi Landesman, that at most it means those issues that are very relevant to the divorce itself. And therefore, in that context, he says that Shalot Tinas Laploni, actually, if you look in the Maharshtam himself, he's talking about a chalitza situation where he's worried that the woman is going to go marry an uncle who already has a wife. This was before Chaver Ben Gershom, and that therefore, outside of Chaver Ben Gershom, and therefore he's worried that that's going to create a tremendous shalom bias issue. So there's a specific concern that is there, and that's what it's about. But let's say in the context of kids and the custody, so Rabbi Landesman writes, and this is a very real issue, that it's very hard to allow that to be a condition, even though one could have said, again, counterintuitively, okay, that is a part of the divorce. That's basically how they're splitting up things. But first of all, he writes, it's about a third party, it's about the children, and therefore it's outside of their divorce. And the children, it's not really up to them, that the courts are going to get involved if they have some kind of objection to how things are going. And it could change at any moment. So what kind of a condition could you make like that, where the day after the divorce, the courts can come and say, actually, I think it's got to be the other way, and that's going to be binding. So those were essentially some parameters that were put on that topic. We mentioned also that, to my knowledge, this isn't pointed out anywhere, but it seems like Rav Moshe Feinstein, in that otherwise well-known tshuva, really says the polar opposite of this. It's really very striking if you think about the two together, that Rav Moshe Feinstein has a svara which he wasn't ready to rely on by itself, but still this is the way he understood the concept, that if a husband says, I'm willing to get divorced, but I'm insisting on these conditions, so then, says Rav Moshe, in that case, even if there was not a grounds for kfiya, now you can be kofa, because now you see that really he is willing to divorce, just that he has conditions that he wants to use in order to leverage to get towards them. So that means that essentially the ratzon is there and kfiya is legitimate. So it's really the polar opposite. The Maharshtam is the same metzias, the guy who's ready to give the get but wants to put conditions. So according to the Maharshtam, that means that even if kfiya was justified, now it's not. And according to Rav Moshe, it's the polar opposite, that even if kfiya was not justified, now it is because of that. It's a very striking contrast. In the Sefer Divrei Mishpat, where he talks about where Rabbi Landesman's article is printed, so right after that, there's a psak from a Bezdin, which takes a little bit of a different stance. The Dayanim on the Bezdin were, apparently it's the Tel Aviv Bezdin, because the Bezdin Tel Aviv is the heir of Nachum Prober, and there's Rav Shalom Bibi and Rav Yosef Goldberg. So Rav Yosef Goldberg, if I'm not mistaken, is the same one who was the Mechaber of the Sefer that we quoted a few weeks ago, the Sefer Gad Me'usa, the Sefer Elul Shekof Lamahotzi. So here he's a member of this Bezdin, a couple of interesting things that are a little bit at odds with some things in that Sefer, but whatever it is, that they basically take a little bit more of a Maharshtam centric view and are more deferential to that perspective. But it's interesting here also that they quote the Rashba. We mentioned the Rashba in Rabbi Landesman's discussion, that the Rashba was quoted in the Bedek HaBayis, which was published after the Maharshtam died, that the Rashba says explicitly that one cannot make a claim of Shelo Tinasi Laploni. So they want to suggest that maybe the Rashba in general could accept Tanaim, but Davka that Tanai not, because that Tanai, it's the opposite, that Tanai again is too much, because maybe the whole purpose of Kfiyah in general, at least in some situations, is that the woman shouldn't be in Aguna, that she has to be freed one way or another. So if he's willing to do it, but with conditions, so then Lamaisa, she's not going to be tied up, so then that should be okay. But maybe the Rashba is saying, not if she can't marry such and such, because Lamaisa, that's not real freedom, because she is now still somewhat confined in her choices, so therefore that condition not. So a lot of machlokas here, how to read these various sources. But again, some very prominent contemporary poskim saying that essentially, for most intents and purposes, you can't really put any conditions, or very limited in what conditions you can put. It's interesting also that in the tshuva of Vayan David, by Chaim David Weiss of Antwerp, he has a tshuva which I won't read the whole thing with you, but I copied the link here for his vaskanas. So he opens the tshuva. The tshuva is addressed to Rabbi Landesman. So it's not clear if he's talking about this essay, because there are slight differences in what he quotes, and I think he says it was actually a conversation that he had with Rabbi Landesman. But he says, I don't agree with you. But in terms of his conclusions, he's not that far away. That essentially, so I'll just read to you from his conclusions, won't go through the whole tshuva. But he basically says, Lamaskana, he says, Hecha sha'al pidin kofin asabal lagarsha. Let's say if it's a situation where the halacha would compel a gerushin, v'machmas hamalchus i'efshir l'chvoso, but because of the government, the law is you can't be kofa him, v'toveya avor zekasef, and because of that, he wants to now take some money, he wants to demand some money, because it's possible for him to get away with it, because if it was Jewish autonomy, they'd be compelling him, but they can't because the government's not letting. So he figures, okay, now I can get some money out of this. So he says, Hareza over below Sachmur below Sigzol. So such a person will be in violation of Yisurim Dereis, the Ten Commandments, of Lo Sachmod and Lo Sigzol, one or the other, depending on the exact circumstance, maybe both, depending on the circumstances. But that's very significant. So again, I don't know exactly what the Nakuda in which he disagrees with Rabbi Landesman, again, because it's not published in the tshuva, so I don't know if it's this essay that he is talking about, or if it's another expression of his views, but that seems so far pretty consistent. He also mentions in the tshuva itself that since under those circumstances there's going to be a violation of Lo Sigzol and Lo Sachmud, or both, so then anyone who advises the husband to do this is also in serious violation of Yisurim, that that makes you a partner to these prohibitions, and that's a very serious issue as well. So that's a very major factor. Then he goes on to say, "V'ofen sheyesh safek b'poskin im l'chuyev l'hotzio lo." If it's a situation where there's a safek whether or not he's chayiv in gerushin, ein b'ze iser gzei lehu tavei kesef. If you're just saying that, like you want him to get divorced, so he understands that you're basically asking him for a favor, so then he can ask for money for that. But then he goes on to say, V'chol zeh ledina, v'alamayis oslo t'tvoa kasef yoser meha magiyo. But, practically speaking, it's wrong for him to ask for money more than that which is coming to him. We have to figure out what exactly that means by what is coming to him. So one specific point he says here is that Milvad b'makum sheyesh lo boshes nezek. If he has some recognizable claim halachically, so then it's legitimate for him to ask for that in that context. So it's kishitzad echa tovei gerushin mitzad hasheni enerotza. So let's say if one side, he's talking, by the way, to make it clear also, from the beginning here, he's not talking about just the husband or the wife, he's talking about either party, that whether we're talking about the husband refusing to give or the wife refusing to get, refusing to accept a get, So he felt that the same rules apply on both sides, you know, when you can and when you can't. It's essentially completely egalitarian from the beginning to the end. So if one side wants and one side doesn't, and in fact the one who refuses wants to live in peace with the other one, but through getting paid they'll be able to marry somebody else, so then it's reasonable to ask for money for that, because he didn't do anything that were grounds for him to be compelled to be divorced. So that that's, you know, the point where there may be some room asking for conditions, but again, that's not a major distance from what we've seen, at least from what Landenstein wrote. Certainly, if the situation of kfiya, the Maharshtam was saying that even with kfiya, then if there's a condition, then you can't be kofa. So here, he's not going that far. He's talking about whenever there's kfiya, so then it would be lo sigzol and lo sachmo to ask for anything. He's just saying in terms of situations where there's no kfiya or situations where one side wants to stay married, so then there could be theoretically some legitimacy to asking for something in order to agree, and then maybe there's room to debate that point. So again, there's a lot of different sfeikas here. There is also the issue of what if there is something that is due to the husband. Let's say there is an actual monetary debt of some kind, so whether it's connected to the divorce itself, which makes it perhaps more legitimate, or whether it's something else, so then that's also going to be a topic of some debate. I think it's clear from Rabbi Landesman and Rabbi Dachovsky that they wouldn't accept that. This psak from the Tel Aviv Bezdin, if that's what it is, the Bezdin of Tel Aviv. So here they're a little bit more open to that, depending on how they understand the Maharshtam. But of course, in order to establish that that's the case, you need the Bezdin to paskin that that's the circumstance. And of course, when the Bezdin is involved already, so that changes the whole picture. Which is itself very significant. So just to mention another point that is connected to that. So there is a general machlokas in practice that, let's say you have everybody in Bezdin. So Bezdin's got a couple things to do. So Bezdin has to decide all the division of the marital property and all the issues. There's a lot that they have to preside over. And they also preside over the ceremony of the get. So what do you do first? So there are some svaras that you find in the halachic literature that says that you should do the get last. Why do they say that? So there are a couple of reasons. One reason is because there is a Gemara and there are some Rishonim who right, that when you have a divorced couple, so it's not right for them to be brought together in any context. You want to keep them apart because it's more of an issue than stam a man and woman associating, because we assume because they have a history of familiarity with each other that that could lead to other issues. So in general, you want to keep a divorced couple apart from each other. Rashi interprets that Gemara as talking specifically about a Kohen, because apparently the concern is the Kohen is not allowed to marry any Grusha, including his own Grusha, so maybe the concern is more that there's really no possible Toelis here, so we have to keep them even farther apart, that we have a double whammy, that we have a man and woman who are not allowed to marry each other, and that we have a greater fear that they will be overly familiar with each other because of their shared history. But the implication is that if it's not a Kohen, then you don't have this concern. But other Rishonim, the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, seem to understand it's across the board. So there are some who say, okay, so therefore you shouldn't have the husband and wife continuing to deal with each other in a Bezdin setting or in any setting, because that's going to lead to inappropriate familiarity. You also have a concern that some mentioned, that maybe a get is supposed to be krisus, is supposed to be absolute separation. and that if there are still outstanding issues in terms of the divorce, so then that's not going to be a real separation, and therefore the get is flawed in that sense. A third svar you find, this is perhaps the most serious, is that there are some who worry, Moshe Feinstein has a truth about this also, that maybe if the terms afterwards, if the husband objects to them, so then maybe he'll say, oh, if I didn't know that this was what it was going to be, and Almanas came, I didn't give the get for this condition, and that maybe that will create the impression that the get was illegitimate, and we're worried about that. So we want to know that when he gives the get, he knows exactly what the terms are, he knows exactly how things are being divided, and there isn't any room to say that, oh, I was misled. So I think those are essentially the three svaras that you find to do it that way. Nowadays, there are many who are concerned that we not do it that way because they're worried that there'll be some breakdown in the middle, and that will lead to a get aguna situation. So therefore, in order to make sure that that's not going to happen, so they want to take care of the get first. I discussed this matter with Rabbi Willig today, actually, and so he related, as he has in the past, that he mentioned a certain great Mesadri Gittin who changed our mind on this, who used to do everything else first, and now they decided to do the get, in later years they decided to do the get first, because they've seen so many problems happen. And Willig also mentioned how he was on a Beis Din with a very prominent posek who insisted on doing everything else first and the get last, and I guess the things broke down in the middle, and the get never was given, and the woman remarried, a very serious violation of Torah law. And as he said, 18 years of niyuf, 18 years of adultery have basically been happening because of that decision of the Beis Din. So essentially, his approach is that, I think this is the approach that many others have come to feel as well, is that as far as these three svaras that we mentioned, so whatever they are, but the concern of igun and the concern of niyuf and of related issues that might emerge from the get not ever ending up being given are more serious considerations, and therefore, however you weigh these other factors, that's not going to be important enough to justify that risk. So in terms of addressing them specifically, he told me that the issue of it not being krisus, he thinks, is not a serious issue at all. The issue of the husband and wife not interacting, the ex-husband and ex-wife not interacting, so yeah, we try to minimize it as much as possible, but at the end of the day, this is a hotly contested environment where they're all screaming at each other. He doesn't think that that's really such a risk as far as what it's going to lead to. And as far as the concern that the husband might afterwards say, I didn't give it with this in mind, so it is a serious concern that Poskim mentioned, but at the end of the day, it's not really a psul neget, it's really more of a concern of what it's going to look like and what people will be able to say. And then again, it's outweighed by the concern of igun that could emerge. So that's all within Beis Din. Lamaisa, there's some who ask, okay, so you see from this literature, though, that Batei Din are okay with saying, you know, hold off with the get until everything else is addressed. So whether or not that's true, I still think it's different. It means that they're in Beis Din already, so there you have a reasonable chance to think the Beis Din is going to enforce everything and be able to guide everything to a conclusion. So then the Beis Din can say, okay, we'll do it this way for all these considerations, and have the get at the end. But when you have a couple that's not even in Beis Din in the first place, and the husband's going to say, well, I'm never going to give the get until she agrees to my terms and my Beis Din, so then those, again, the kind of situations that could drag on forever. And I don't think it's really comparable to these circumstances that we are talking about here. Okay, any questions about what we've done so far? Okay, so before we move on to another topic, so just two things maybe to look at together. So that are relevant to this topic. So one question that is practical based on what we've been seeing now is, so we mentioned that a major difference is going to be whether it's a kfiya situation or not. But we've also seen that there are many cases where kfiya is a machlokas, whether it's appropriate or not. So how exactly does that fit in when there's going to be grounds for debate? Each party is going to say, well, I think you can do kfiya, I think you can't do kfiya. So how do you deal with that as far as a difference in opinion? So what happens to the principle of kimli, which I think we discussed in a different context a little while ago, right? That sometimes when you have a monetary dispute, so one party can say that I feel like I subscribe to the other opinion. So what happens if it's a machlokas about kfiya, and the husband says, well, with my great wisdom, I paskin like the opinion that says I'm not subject to kfiya. So does he have a right to do that? So that's something we'll have to take a look at. There is a discussion about that in the Sefer Ohli Shimon. But first, just as relates to another point, the point that we mentioned from Reb Moshe about in terms of what's kfiya in the first place as far as some of these factors are concerned, and the idea that it has to be somewhat proportional to the concern. Right, the idea that if a person has some monetary penalty, but it's not enough to make him leave a happy marriage, so it's only enough to push him to the final finish line to give the get, so maybe that shouldn't be called onus anyway. So the aforementioned of Dachovsky has an article about this, which I sent around to Morty last week. That's the one from Tchumen Chavzayin, 27, basically about proportionality in the kfiya beget. So let's just take a little bit of a look at that. You know, Dachovsky's positions on this issue are very important. So, also, the other article I sent, which I just summarized, so we won't look at it together, but the other article from Dachovsky is one where he talks about the question of conditions. And if you take a look at the beginning of that article, he has a whole introduction about how so much of the problem that we have today is because of jurisdiction wars, because you have... the Beis Din will say one way, and the civil courts will say another way, or a different Beis Din will say another way. So you could fight about jurisdiction, you could fight about these circumstances forever, and again, that's what we've mentioned again, one of the many milas of the prenup, that the prenup addresses that up front, and that should save us a lot of tzaras, which is again, if you read Rav Dachovsky's other essay, he says at the beginning that that's really the cause of the modern crisis, this jurisdiction war, and that's something which can be addressed through the prenup. So to look at this article, so he writes as follows, Nikita Tzadei Akifa Keneged Sarvani Get, to take steps of coercion against those who refuse to give a get. Kasher Medubar Be'elu Shehuivu Beget L'lo Kfiya. Let's say if we're talking about somebody who's been obligated in a get, but without Kfiya. Mahava Baya Halachasis Lo Kala. It's a not simple halachic problem. Mitzad echad ein afsharis l'hatav lehem sanktios koavios. From one perspective, you're not able to impose upon them very painful sanctions. Mishum shepsak hadin einenu l'chviya el l'chiyuv bilvad. Because you don't have grounds for kviya, you only have grounds for chiyuv, so you can't do anything too aggressive. Nikita sanktios akifos. If you're going to do more roundabout types of sanctions, Kigon harchakas Rebbeinu Tam, such as the harchakas Rebbeinu Tam that we spent some time talking about, oh tzade hagbalah mardanim, or the limitations that we have in a modern context, kedugmas asanktsia shelachok bat edin rabbanim, such as the sanctions that are found in the law of the bat edin rabbanim, which include kigon. I think we spoke about this a little bit. Kigon shlilas rishayin nehiga. Let's say the Israeli government will take away someone's driver's license, hakbalas cheshbon of a bank, or they'll limit his ability to have a bank account, a mania la'asik b'isa katon harshah, they won't let him get involved in businesses that need licenses. So, eina effectivios mikrim rabim, they're not effective in many circumstances. You see, he's assuming this is legitimate, even in a non-kfiya situation. But he says they're not always effective, but frappers are bani haget ha-kashim, especially with the very hardened get refusers. She'ein lehem rechush o cheshbin bank. They don't have any property. They don't have any bank account. She'ein lehem oskin b'yisa katon hasha. They don't do any business that requires any licensing, right? You have people like this. I've heard a lot of cases like this where the husband, you know, it's maybe why there was a divorce in the first place, and the husband is really just not involved in anything. So there's very little you can get him on because he just doesn't really have any involvements with things. That's true even in the broader areas of life. But certainly you have husbands who aren't so observant, so that's relevant to the next part of the sentence. They don't daven in shul, and therefore they don't care, and they don't have a problem with joining a minyan. Who also had sol hatala sanctius akifus mislag after. So then there was a suggestion to put other roundabout sanctions of a different category. Nituk mireshas hachashmal mireshas amayim. We should cut them off from electricity, and we should cut them off from water. Ulam hatzah zu in his ochle tmicha mitzvah mishpatim, but this suggestion is not supported in the judicial offices. V'yesh ba pegiya gam mishpacha, and it's also going to hurt the rest of the family. Oh, ba'elu shasarvim misgoverimayim, or if there are other people who live with the refuser. L'maisa nosa sanctios akifus mutzah l'chalutin. So this is a very tricky, exhausted topic. How exactly do you address the issue of effective and permissible and measured proportionate sanctions? So he writes there also b'daiti derech l'nikita sanctios yeshirus neged atzarban gam kishurak mechuyev beget mebli l'stavich b'chashash ged melusa. So he says, Tarkovsky, that it occurred to me that there is a way to take sanctions that are direct against the refuser, even if he's only in a category of chayiv and not kfiya, mibli l'estabech b'chashash ged me'usa, that we, without getting all mixed up and entangled in the concern of a forced get. So he quotes that Rav Herzog, the chief rabbi, in his Tshuvas Heichel Yitzchak, dam b'psak din shemitim b'bezden ezori k'neged bal sabra neget, that he deals with a situation that the local bezden had imposed against the get refuser, shechuyav petashnul mizonos, that he was obligated in paying for the sustenance. Agam shlonitin lekol for the get, even though he's not obligated, he wasn't subject to coercion. V'alav she'isha mishtakeres l'parnasasa, and even though the woman is getting paid for her work, she's earning a lot of money, and the husband is not subject to kfiya beget, but nonetheless, it was ruled about him that he has to pay for her sustenance. V'chein kastav Rav Herzog. Here's what Rav Herzog says in his tshuva. He says, V'od yesh lana les b'inein. We have to figure out. Shal karchecha ein kol hatalas schum kasef ones gomer. That not every imposition of a sum of money is ones gomer. B'chon zeh lo amrinan din pruta k'din meyeh. And this is not a category in which we say that a pruta is like 100. It's the expression you find by a bezdin. We say that a bezdin should take every case seriously, whether it's a small case or a big case. So we say that we don't really care about amounts. Everything is important. So if you have a din Torah over a small amount, we take it seriously just like we do with a large amount. So he says here, we don't say like that, that din pruta ka din meya, and that not every penalty is the same. So it's hagob atzmach. Think about this yourself. Mashem muflo get yilu la bezis chum katan. That if you have an incredibly wealthy person, and they will put on him a small fine. Halazayi kari onus lagarish ishto. So that's going to be considered onus to divorce his wife. And if this person doesn't have any other intention other than to cause her anguish or to squeeze money out of her, klum hayimagarish b'shvil shemetilum olav mezonos she'enus chum god l'klal b'erech l'fim atzavo. So is he going to divorce because they're putting on mizonos, which is not a great fine, is not a great number in relation to his standing? No, he'll pay, and he'll wait, and he'll hope that maybe she'll change her mind from her revulsion that she has for him. But if we see that he divorces because he's worried to hold on to this small amount of money, she'ena pogeya bo harbe, which doesn't have a big impact on him, zem mareh shu misratza be'emes, right? This was essentially Ramosha's point, right? This shows that he really does agree. Okay, so he's willing only because he's worried about his money. Since this is not the kind of loss that would really knock him out, that would leave him without a living, that we see that his soul is not really tied in with her soul, to whatever extent he may have claimed that it was, v'haget kasher. That get is acceptable. Again, that's consistent with things that Rav Moshe should say. V'ein the get mu, so that's not called forced. It's only called a get that's forced. Ela kishmet tilim olav davar she'ena b'kaycha lizbol. That if they put something on him that is not within his ability to handle, kigon yisuri haguf oschum atzim shemharis oso, such as if it was some kind of physical affliction. Right, remember when we had that discussion a few weeks ago about what is considered kvi and what isn't considered kvi and what's the definition of harchakas to Rabbeinu Tam. So he says here that if you're really going to hurt him physically or you're putting a huge amount of money that's going to destroy him, it's going to leave him penniless, so then that would be gemusa. But not if we're talking about a number that doesn't have any significant impact on him. Adarabba, quite the opposite. Bezoisi bochin. Here's how we'll test it. That if for this kind of money he's willing to get divorced, we see that that's not called onus. Now it's hard to establish absolute numbers. But so every bezin has to figure out exactly what we're talking about. So that's the quote from Rav Herzl. So it says Rav Dechavsky, Mashmos advarim einos onus eino davar muchlat. Onus is not some absolute quality. Ela davar yachasi, it's something relative. It's something subjective. Kasher medubar onus l'seis chayfetz l'yoker. If we're talking about he's being forced to give something not too expensive, azai gam onus kali chashiv onus. That he's going to give up something that's not so expensive, so then a little bit of pressure on him will be considered onus because it's not so, yoker I guess here doesn't mean expensive, it means something that's not so dear to him. If you say you're going to put a penalty on him unless he gives up the donut that he took for breakfast, so then that would constitute onus for the donut because, okay, so holding on to the donut simply isn't worth the penalty that they're making him pay. Aval kashim meduber b'chafetz yoker, when we're talking about something that is very dear to the person, azay onus kal eino onus. So therefore, a little bit of onus is not called onus, ela rak onus chomer, only a serious onus. For example, let's say you're going to force someone to give his house away as a gift. So, and if he's not going to do it, he'll slap him in the face. He said, give up your house or I'll slap you in the face. So a normal, sane, reasonable person would rather get slapped in the face than have to lose his house. So that's what he'll do. If we're talking about some small thing, like a bag, so then if they'll say, give me your bag, I'll slap you in the face, so then maybe that is called onus, because it's a painful slap and it's a cheap bag, so then maybe that is called onus. So it's the same logic when talking about divorce. So, when it comes to a person's beloved wife, so he's not gonna, a person's not going to agree to separate from her. Elam keni anis panos god v'kasha, unless they're really going to give him a hard time. Onus kal eino ome b'shem yachas ibar yishurisuya. A small onus doesn't mean anything in relation to giving up a beloved wife. Imachein muchan adam l'garish b'chal onus kal. If a person is still ready to do it for a small reason, that's a sign that he's not interested in his wife. And he's it's enough for him to give her up with a small incentive. So then he continues to quote a little bit more from Rav Herzog. Herzog writes, we've seen that in a situation where there's a mitzvah to give a get, but it's not a situation where it's legitimate to hit with sticks. Right, that Rabbeinu Tam instituted the harchaka that we know about. That we should accept upon ourselves a policy not to do business with him until he gives the get. The klum means the lachetz gadol. Is that not a great pressure? The klum mutal with tzar adam Yisrael b'ofinch kazev. Would it normally be all right for if there's a guy in shul just for fun, everyone gets up and says we're not going to do business with him? Would that be mutter? Presumably not. So ve'echlo chasha shebeinu tam leget musa. So how was it that Rebbeinu Tam was not worried about get musa? Yal karcha shelo kol kfiya shavo. So you see that not all kfiya is equal. And in such a circumstance, you have a chazaka that if he wasn't really willing deep down, then he wouldn't get divorced because of this lachetz. So this is an important point. Again, we've seen this logic from Reb Moshe, but what Reb Herzog is adding here is that he specifically, although Reb Moshe touched upon this too, he's specifically understanding that that's how chakash Rebbeinu Tam. The reason how chakash Rebbeinu Tam is not kfiya, is because by its nature, it's all things that we have evaluated that are less valuable than a happy marriage. That nobody would give up a happy marriage for any of these pressures. So if he does, then that shows you that he wasn't really that committed to it. And that therefore, that's not called onus. You'll also remember, we said at the time, that Rabbeinu Tam has extra ne'amanus on this issue. The reason he's so accepted with his harchakos is because he is machmir on Mo Salai. And he says that you're not allowed to be kofa without some serious grounds. So therefore, when he says this is what you are allowed to do, we take him even more seriously that that would not violate his own red line for what is called kfiya. So divrei Rav Herzog berurim. The words of Rav Herzog are very clear. Harchakas Rebbeinu Tam ain't a davar shel ma b'kach. The harchakas Rebbeinu Tam are not nothing, right? They are serious difficulties. Gam netaritzas meinu v'nomer shemadubur lachatz akif alasviva shiloi tischaber love. Even if we answer it up for ourselves and we say we're talking about roundabout kind of pressures on the environment that people shouldn't be friends with him, below belachas yashir alav, and not direct pressure on him. Sof nimtza adam lachutz. At the end of the day, the guy is unhappy. The guy is in a pressured situation. So my nafkaminish b'shvilo medub belachas yashir sheinu yashir. What do we care? What does he care? If we're talking about direct pressure or indirect pressure, harei anin sadi shirak b'gal lachutz nos and get. We see that it's only because the lachas that he's doing it. That's why we're doing it. Alachas kama v'kama barachokos modernia shibachok. So all the more so in the modern distances that we find in the law, hamavsharos lefatra mevadaso, that which make it possible for him to get fired from his job, right? Ledugma, for example, in purofe, if he's a doctor, let's say, haino bal mikso hatayin rishui, so he's part of a profession that needs a license, efshar lefatro, he could end up getting fired. I am saying lachas. That's not pressure. Al karcha shekemen shemedub lachas yef shalam or bo. So it must be that because we're talking about pressure that a person could withstand ki yochel esparnes mevod acheres, because he could do other jobs. Lamrosh shazu yirida gedola mishra sharofe. Yeah, it's going to be a big step down, but he could support himself. Ein zeh nechsha lachas shel kfiya machletes. That's not considered to be lachat, the lachat of absolute kfir. Imkach gam get sheinosin bikvas atolat sanctios kaspik mkveles. So if that's true, so even a get that's given through monetary sanctions, via filu gufanias masuna, sheina mumutetes, sheina maharases, elamachbida leyachashev lemusa. Even if it's unpleasant and it's pressure, but that's not going to be called meusa. This is also what we see from the Torah's Gittin, from the Nesivos, who wrote, quote, Kol shekafu l'asos pesachot pachos mishivyov. So anybody who is forced, let's say, to sell something for less than it's worth, havi kitulu v'yoyv, that's like saying we're forcing you and you have to give it as a gift because it's getting less than the actual price. V'im kein beged ishoy af shalomer klal dehavi v'shivyov. So when it comes to a get, so we can never say that it's ever worth what she's worth, so to speak. Dulai kolhon yavozul about ishto, because a happily married person will give up everything rather than give up his wife. V'ulai chavivale yishto kigufo. He loves his wife as much as he loves himself, so he's not going to give her up for any amount of money. Im kein nosen haget b'avur hamamon. So if so, so he's not giving the get for the money. Masha'in kein b'uvzit der hashba. So that's not the case in the situation of the Rashba, which the Rashba was machmer and onus mamon. She'en lo onus acher rak mashamafzit hamamon shenes chayev liteng im lo yigarish. There's no other pressure except that he's going to lose the money that he's obligated to give if he doesn't divorce. Kshem yigarish miyiris mamon zeh. And when he gets divorced, because of the fear of that monetary loss, harei roen shemamon zeh chavel av mishazu. So then we see that the mamon is more valuable to him than his wife. So then that mammon is exactly what the wife is worth to him. So the divrei Torah is getting him, but tamsis divrei of Herzog. So the Torah is getting essentially saying the same thing as with Herzog. So his point is that we have to measure the pressure against that which is being pressured about. So the Torah is getting is saying that if a person gets divorced because of monetary pressure, that shows that his wife was only as precious to him as the money was. There's absolutely room to say that this is Herzog's point, that if his wife is not worth to him more than this money, so that itself is proof that he doesn't want her. And everything that holds back the get is for other reasons. And therefore the pressure is not that which causes the get. His desire to divorce, to be separated from her, that's what brings him to divorce her. And that's also what we saw from Ramosha, as we mentioned. That a guy who doesn't want to get divorced until his wife will give him $1,000, which is a big sum of money those days, we should serve, and the wife refused. Then she turned to the courts, and they made him pay for the zonas. When they didn't pay, he was put in jail. And then he agreed to give a get. Remember, the Ramosha wrote that that's not a get ma'usa. So he has a quotation here, which we saw already. So harei lana shonas mamon pesachad shimuat en nechshav ones. You see that a small amount of money in a monthly basis is not called ones. Mishum shesach muat en ome b'shem yachas levitur al isha, because such a small number doesn't amount to anything in relation to giving up on his wife. So what's he going to say from this? So a little bit more, which we'll have to start with tomorrow, and then we'll talk about that question of Kimli, and then we have to get into some other issues, such as Cherem Derben Gershom. What exactly is the scope of the prohibition for the husband to marry somebody else while he's still married? And then some of the other suggestions that have been made, you know, in terms of addressing the situation, that's what's on our immediate horizon. Okay, so again, the next two nights, Tuesday and Wednesday, we'll meet, God willing, at 6. And then we'll take it from there. All right, everyone should have a wonderful night.